Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, January 19th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Oh, it was kind of a strange day in the markets. The Dow was up big, triple digits, and it reversed. It was in negative territory and slowly found its way back. We saw the same thing with gold today, up and down, up and back down again. Not by much, just barely a point, 1,088.90, down 90 cents. How is something priced at 1,100, basically down couple pennies? Doesn't make sense. It does when you know it's manipulated. Silver's down 13 cents. I'm sorry, it's up 13 cents at 14.14. Platinum is down one at 832. Palladium's holding at 497. The paper markets, the USDX today is down 0.05 at 99.07. Crude oil took another beating, down 1.03 at 28.39. And the paper markets today barely eked out 27 points, but it was able to keep it up above 16,000, and that's what they were looking for, 16,016, up 27 points. The NASDAQ didn't fare so well. It was still down 11 points at 44.76. S&P basically unchanged at 18.81. 10-year yield, 2.04%. The euro, 1.09. That's up, which is interesting to see that being up with the strength in the dollar, 109 up 0.19. Let's see if there's anything else interesting out there. Asian markets were up strong. Hong Kong was up 2%. London and Germany were both up over 1.5%. I don't know what the Shanghai did. Let me bring that up on my other screen to give us an idea. Perhaps Shanghai. I have a new screen, and sometimes it takes me a while. It was up 3% overnight. That is back up over 3,000 to 3,007, up 3.22%. It was up 93 points. Everything else has been in the green, India, Japan, Singapore. So the world markets recovered from last Friday. But the Dow had a little bit harder time, particularly since all the other markets were up, you know, all over 1% basically. So the Dow could barely manage a couple of points. So we'll see what tomorrow brings. And
we have to wonder. I mean, this was not a dramatic day.
It
was an upturn for most of the world. Not necessarily for the Dow, but for most of the world, it was an upturn.
It gives
us a clue that maybe what we saw in the first 2 weeks is the declines that we saw in the U.S. and foreign markets, that those declines are now perhaps abated. Do you think that's true, or is this are we in the center of the hurricane right now? It's going to be a little bit peaceful, but we will get into something a little more.
I mean, when we've seen the turmoil that we've had for the first 2 weeks of January, I mean, you're bound and about to maybe settle down a little bit, maybe go for some smooth sailing. However, I mean, there isn't anything out there to support the calm. So I don't expect it to, other than the elections. And, you know, usually during an election year, they always will try to keep things fairly smooth. But, I mean, you have Iran, you have those sanctions that are being lifted. And certainly, you know, they're working to bring more oil on. And I do believe this is an oil story. I believe that oil is really breaking the back of a lot of these economies. And, you know, because you had so much debt, so many loans that are going to be defaulted, you're going to have a lot of, you know, loans, jobs that are lost. So I think there was a report out today in your area, not in your area direct, but Houston, their real estate market, how home sellers are slashing prices. They're trying to keep incentives going to keep buyers from walking away. And they view this strictly as because of the oil slump.
Probably.
Because there was such a, you know, they were, you know, certainly benefiting. Home construction permits in this area plunged 26% from a year earlier in the third quarter. December sales of existing single-family houses, that fell 10% from the same month of 2014. So certainly you're beginning to see, and I don't think it's just in the Houston area. You're going to see it all over, and certainly in areas around the country that have grown significantly due to the higher oil prices. So I think this is you know, something that will be creeping in. Go ahead.
I think you mean lower oil prices, don't you?
Yes, the lower oil prices. Yeah. I think this is what you're going to be see creeping into the markets. So as far as this is the end of the volatility in the stock markets, no, I don't. I mean, you know, we know that you have these major corporations who borrowed to buy back their shares to keep their numbers high. They're borrowing to pay dividends. We've seen dividends that are being slashed. So, no, I don't think this is the end, but we certainly could be in calmer waters for a while. But and I think this is a good reason to mention to the listeners, you don't know when it's going to happen. We've certainly hit the strong waters, the rough waters, but that's why if you're just waiting to see what happens, it's probably the worst things that you can do. You know, you have to take action. You have to be active in your finances. You have to be aware of what's going on and be active.
And you've got to actually, you know, it's not just looking out the window to see if the water is rising. It's actually looking at the weather report to find out if there's incoming and inclement weather. It's not, the solution to problems is not to solve them as they happen per se, but ideally to anticipate the problems and do what you got to do. At least now that requires a certain amount of, you've got to look, you've got to make a prediction. What's going to happen in the future? You know, and hard to do because nobody ever knows for sure what's going to happen, but you can look at you know, there can be a preponderance of the evidence where you sit back and say, you know, I think the stock market's going down. And right now, that's kind of where we are. I mean, I don't think anybody can point to good evidence and say, oh, yeah, things are going to straighten out here very soon.
You know, Al, at one point in time, you could. It was easier to make predictions. You could see where the markets were going. You knew when things were overvalued, and you knew how long they could stay. Maybe you didn't have the exact, you know, spreads to the degree and so forth, but you could pretty much see. That's how we all knew about 2008. We all knew about the housing market. We all knew about that. Now that the markets are so manipulated and moved by the Federal Reserve and these multinational corporations, it's almost impossible. And anybody out there that is making predictions, I think what we do, what you and I do, is we give the weather report. But we don't make, you know, we're not going to say it's going to rain tomorrow, but there are certainly clouds, you know, take your umbrella. And I think that's why so many of these wild predictions out there are always so wrong, because they're not focusing on, or they don't know, or they're not taking into consideration how manipulated these markets are, both by the Federal Reserve, my multinational corporations, and good Lord, and these mutual funds that have these huge amounts of funds to move and to impact markets. That's why charts don't work. You know, that's why trends, you can't even, you know, have a trend anymore, because it reverses so quickly. But yet normally, you know, probably prior to 2008, you could pretty well, you know, be comforted in that trend, knowing that a trend is your friend. Now it's a lot up in the air. That's the volatility that we're experiencing.
Well, we're seeing a war go on between what might be called fundamentals and what might be called manipulators. And fundamentals are pushing the market one way, and the manipulators are trying to push it in the opposite direction. And it is going up and down a certain degree, sort of like a yo-yo. It's choppy, certain amount of volatility, blah, blah, blah. Got an article here from Treasury slaps new sanctions on Iran. You mentioned that the sanctions on Iran have been, they were ended in the last couple of days.
And while they're still getting their money.
Yeah, they're getting over $100 billion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Treasury slaps new sanctions on Iran over missile program. This to me is just evidence of Obama can't catch a break. It says on the day after the U.S. and other nations removed most of the sanctions on Iran over its nuclear program, the U.S. Treasury Department imposed a new, much smaller series of penalties on Iranian individuals and companies over Tehran's missile program. Treasury Department, you end sanctions on Monday and you increase sanctions on Tuesday. I don't know. It just looks stupid. You know, there may be good reasons for this. There may be some rationale behind this, but it really looks kind of dumb, doesn't it? I mean, end sanctions and then start new sanctions. Yes, they're smaller sanctions, and the sanctions are because Iran has a ballistic missile program. Treasury Department statement said 11 entities, five of them persons, were involved in procurement on behalf of Iran's ballistic missile program. So they are sanctioning 11 entities. I don't know. Aren't there any flies they can pull the wings off of or something like that? You know, how much sense does this make? It just seems foolish. It seems, what are we doing here? Why can't we just either have sanctions, don't have sanctions? This does not make good sense to me. It may make perfect sense to the administration, but it seems strange to me. What else have we got? Here's one. Why the heck are the markets tanking? This was Yahoo Finance on the 15th. It was last Friday. I think it was Friday, maybe Saturday. But in any case, Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 537 points at one point on Friday before ending the day off 390 points. First 10 trading days. Worst 2-week start to the market ever. It's down 1,400 points. Standard & Poor off 8%. NASDAQ's down 10%. Europe stocks 600 down 20% off its high. China's Shanghai Composite. They go on with the problems. But they're asking, leaving investors scratching their heads and asking, what the heck is going on? Well, gee, I wonder, you know. Stock markets are closing down on a global basis. That was true at least up until today. How can that be if the Federal Reserve and other central banks are juicing the markets? And that was the term used by Richard Fisher, former president of the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank. And he admitted they were juicing the markets. They were artificially stimulating the markets. They were doing the equivalent in the markets, getting a racehorse and giving a shot of amphetamine right before the race. Right? And people are saying, golly, I wonder what's happening. Well, Mr. Fisher, he said the problem is not China. He said people are blaming China. His article was entitled, Don't Blame China. He says the problem is the Federal Reserve, of which he was a part for 10 years up until last March. All right? But here we have Yahoo Finance saying, gee, what's happening? What the heck is going on? Isn't everyone guaranteed? The theory here is that everyone should be guaranteed by the Fed's ZIRP and QE to win in the stock markets. Given the Fed's QE support, aren't the stock markets too big to fail? I mean, that's apparently the way people think about this. You don't suppose that maybe, just maybe, the Fed has run out of the will and or of the resources needed to continue supporting the markets. You think that might be happening? Because if they have, the markets are likely to fall to whatever fundamentals, not the Fed, dictate. I mean, what that means is that the markets could lose half or more of their current perceived value. Now, wouldn't that be a stunner? Insofar as markets are falling globally, that indicates there is a systemic problem in the markets. You can bet that the markets will continue to fall until the systemic problem is identified and publicly admitted. So long as people profess not to know, so as long as they sit back and say, gee, what the heck's going on here? As long as they profess not to know what the problem is, how will that problem be solved? Divine intervention? Dumb luck? As long as investors keep saying, what the heck has happened? Whatever it is that's happened, to push markets down will probably keep on happening. The Milan, the article I was reading from, says ultimately the anxiety-ridden market, which is, by the way, impacting not just equities, but commodities, bonds, and currencies as well, reflects investors' concern about global growth. Are you concerned about global growth, Melody?
I don't, because I buy gold and silver. You know, it's interesting. Later on this week, there's an ECB meeting, Euro Central Bank, and they're there to look to see if they're going to put any more stimulus in the markets. And while I was reading about that earlier today, they were talking about how, you know, and this is, again, mainstream media talking, you know, but it talks about how the global growth worries, even though serious, but they look at lower commodity prices, is it like an upside? And that means our dollar is so strong that a lot of it makes their consumers are able to spend more money on goods and services that are produced inside their little block. And just like when I talked to my friend in Canada, he says, your country is killing you with that stronger dollar.
Yeah, no.
He says, it's just stripping you of your agriculture sales or your any other type of thing that you export. And, you know, and he says, basically, that's the last nail in the coffin. Because they're that's the final stripping, the gutting of this country. And they're going to keep that dollar strong until it's done and over with. There's no turning. And then I think you'll see, and I think that's very important for the rest of the world. So it, you see it impacting when they talk about the lower commodity prices, you know, how it benefits everyone else. But it's just killing anything that's here in the States. For business. So you're going to see more and more layoffs. You're going to see, you know, more and more businesses closed down.
Deflation is a hallmark of economic depression. I mean, it's one of the things you'll always see. So far as I don't think they've ever had an economic depression where there wasn't deflation. Because as soon as the dollar starts buying more, people start hoarding it, hanging on to it, and then they don't spend anything.
It's not that the people are hoarding things here, Al. It's the other countries, because we're so globalized with free trade, they're not buying anything. It's
no,
other countries. They're going elsewhere. Well, and it is true to some degree. It's a more global sort of deflation than here in the States, because we know in the States everything is more expensive. you know, our staples, our cost of living. That's all more expensive. And, I mean, have you known a consumer here in the States that have actually waited for any length of time to spend their money? No. You know, so, but because there's, you know, like just like Canada, they can go elsewhere. They don't have to come to the States to buy their stuff. They can go to Europe. They can go to China. They can go pretty much anywhere else in the world to buy their products.
And now they can even go to Iran if they want to.
Let's
take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, and we'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the 3Ws.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, and it's brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
You know, we got some more beautiful AU $5 Liberty Gold pieces in, and our 2016 Silver Eagles are in, and I'm going to continue that special. It includes all your shipping costs for $700. You just have to give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's a beautiful AU $5 Liberty Gold piece, along with 20 of the brand new 2016 1-ounce Silver Eagles. You get 20 of those in a tube, includes shipping costs. All for $700. Call us 1-800-375-4188. I know you listeners just love that package. We sell so many of them, and because it is a great little trading tool, both your fractional piece of gold and, of course, your silver eagles. And all of suddenly I had questions about those gram bars, the gram gold. You know, folks, stay away from them. I'm not going to spend time on it today. Maybe I will on Thursday during my 20-minute segment, and we'll talk a little bit more about those grams and, you know, some of these other things that are circulating that I think it's just a waste of money. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter.
Got a headline here from the Associated Press. China-led development bank aims to swiftly approve loans. Okay, we're talking about the Asia Infrastructure Investment Bank, right? Newly created, part of Beijing's efforts to weave together regional trade partners and solidify its global status. The AIIB, that's the acronym, Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, officially opened on Saturday in Beijing, formalizing the emergence of a competitor to the Washington-led World Bank. Okay, China-led development bank aims to swiftly approve loans. They opened Saturday. Right? This is interesting to me because they don't intend to actually be making any loans until the end of this year. The bank would welcome the United States and Japan, two economic powers that have declined invitations to join the organization. China pledged to put up most of the bank's $50 billion in capital and says the total will eventually be as high as $100 billion. But they are aiming to approve their first loans before the end of the year. If I were going to open a restaurant and I said, Melody, I'm opening my restaurant, come on down. And Melody says, yay, Al's opening his restaurant. Well, there's only one thing. We're not going to actually be serving any food or liquor, and we don't even have tables and chairs, and we won't have them until the end of the year. Does that sound like I'm trying to swiftly open my restaurant? My idea of opening a restaurant is you open the restaurant, and you have food that people can try. And they say, hey, this is really good. I'm going to come back. That's what I'm looking at. And here we have China-led development bank. Headline, they aim to swiftly approve loans, but in fact, they won't approve any loans until the end of this year. I wonder, I don't know what the reason is for this. It just sounds silly to me on one level. And I wonder if China is waiting.
That's what I think.
For most of a year to make these loans because China is already in a lot of financial stress. And it doesn't want to kick in the $50 billion in order to make the loans at this time. But, you know, what's the point to open? Yay, the bank is open. Come on down to the AA or the AIIB bank. But we won't be giving away any toasters, and we don't have any money to lend until maybe next November, December.
Well, I think that sort of coincides with their acceptance into the IMF, the basket of currencies. Remember, they accepted them, but they weren't actually going to be officially in there until next year. So the timing kind of coincides with that. And I kind of think, too, that this is sort of they're waiting, I think, to see if they were going to be accepted into the basket of currencies and if they were not, because remember, the IMF comes out and says, oh, well, you know, maybe you should, you know, we're going to wait until next year. And then a couple months later, they came out and said, well, we're going to admit you, but it won't be, you know, it won't be completed until later on in 2016, which we thought was kind of odd, but you know, who are we to know, you know, world finances like that. But so I think maybe, is it a coincidence that the timing
is
similar?
It's just so strange. I mean, What's the point to opening the doors if you're not going to do business for most of a year?
I think it's called leverage, Al.
I don't know what it's called.
I think it's called leverage.
I think they made promises that they'd get it open, and then they said, wait a second, we don't have the $50 billion right now. We can't afford it. I don't know what the real reason is, but
I think it's leverage.
It's one of those things you look at and say, something's going on here.
I think it's leverage, you know. because they did want the U.S. in there, they did want Japan in there, and they declined. And I you know, politics. But
here's a couple more headlines from yesterday. Asian shares dropped to 2011 levels as oil slump intensifies. That's from Reuters. Point being, we haven't made any sort of recovery. We've had a good day for the markets globally. They didn't go down all by itself. How was the day? It was great. The markets didn't crash. Didn't go up much, but they didn't crash, so it's a great day. They're down to 2011 levels. That puts them back about 4 or 5 years. They're not going to regain that overnight. Here's another one from Reuters. European stocks look to fight out of the global gloom. European stocks look to fight out of the global gloom. It's just more evidence. Nobody's really thinking this is over yet. Here's another one. This is from the AFP. European Central Bank to keep door open to new easing. All right. That's just saying, look, they're going to do more quantitative easing if they have to, if they get to. And everything's being blamed on oil. That's where most of this is. Everyone likes to point at oil. I'm not sure that that's a valid excuse. In fact, I've seen other reports that they calculate that the reason oil went up so much in the first place was because of the Fed's quantitative easing program. They had low interest rates. They had lots of extra money for people who were connected in major corporations. It made it possible for the oil shale boom to take place in this country. And the oil shale boom, to a significant degree, helped to drive the price of oil up. And we actually saw oil pushing 150. There are people who think that it was the Federal Reserve's easy money policy that really laid the foundation for the big increase in the price of oil. And then when the Federal Reserve turned off quantitative easing, and more recently began to raise interest rates just a touch, a quarter of a percent. They think this is the signal that, oops, we're not going to guarantee that everyone's going to win in their investments anymore. And if that's the case, a lot of people don't want to play the game if there's a risk of losing. You know, with the Federal Reserve, they have attempted to stimulate the economy in a way that, whether they intended to or not, kept the Dow Jones average rising for the last 4 or 5 years. Right? We had a great bull market. But that bull market was subsidized by the Federal Reserve. And with their de facto subsidies, by making low interest rates and lots of money available and the rest of it, they created an artificial market. And an artificial in the market, and the index went up and up and up, and everybody. It was essentially their quantitative easing turned into a near guarantee that anyone who invested in the stock market for 4 or 5 years, you couldn't lose. You had to be almost pretty dumb. Now, that's an exaggeration. You could lose. I get that. But as long as the Fed was guaranteeing that the market was going to continue to rise, the index was going to rise, you were almost guaranteed to win. A lot of people liked, hey, that's great. I like going to Las Vegas, where the slot machines are geared to where you're sure every time you pull the handle, you win money. Gee, is this a great country or what? But now the Fed has reached a point where they said, well, we don't care if you pull the handle. We're not going to guarantee your winnings anymore. And to some degree, that's what we're dealing with right now. We've got people just saying, look, I'm out of here. I'm not going to play this game anymore. I'm starting to lose money. And the Fed won't guarantee me to win, and therefore I don't want to play. And as a result, prices are falling and likely to continue doing so unless and until the Fed goes back and reinstates quantitative easing. The question is, will they reinstate quantitative easing? What do you think, Melody?
They will reinstate it somehow. They won't call it that, but they will have some sort of a program. They're going to have to, unless they're ready to allow the system to collapse. If they're ready to purge it, then they won't.
I'm not convinced that they can. Right?
Well,
I'm not convinced that they have the resources to continue with another episode of quantitative easing. It's my understanding that the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, they've only got about 3.5% more assets than they have liabilities. There's not much money up there, and that 3.5% is based on the price of bonds. If the value, face value of bonds goes down by 5%, the Fed might be technically insolvent. I don't know that they've got the resources to actually stimulate this economy again. And I think that's part of the reason why they quit QE back, I don't know, last year sometime, October, whenever, and then also raised interest rates a little bit. I don't think they can afford to play the game. And we'll watch and see. I may be mistaken about that, but we'll watch and see if they can really hold this thing up or they've just got to let it go. And if they do, what's going to happen? It's going to go back to whatever level will support it by based on fundamentals. And it'll probably even fall below that level and then bounce back up to the fundamentals level. What does that mean? It suggests that if the Fed has been juicing the market, again, to use Richard Fisher's description, former president of the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank, he knows what he's talking about. And he used the word juicing to describe the Fed's activity. If they've been juicing it for 4 or 5 years and started out when the market was in the neighborhood of 8,000, then we have to wonder how much of the next 8,000 on top of that was due to juicing and how much is real. If it's all juice, we're going back down to 8,000. If the Fed can no longer play this game, and maybe they can't, we'll watch and see, but maybe they can't. If so, then.
Oh, I agree. I believe they are running out of moves, certainly. But, and it is a matter of a point whether they're ready to have it collapse or not. So you're going to have to see something. But they will try first. Somehow, some way, they will try first. Because unless they are ready to allow it to purge, unless they're ready to purge the system. And I do believe, to some degree, they do have that amount of control.
I think they have influence. I use the word influence rather
than
control. I think they're still fighting reality. Reality is there.
Sure.
It's like fighting gravity. I strap myself into the seat to fly an airplane. I can defy reality for gravity and reality for, hours.
Still have trillions.
Sooner or later, you got to come back. You're going to run out of gas and you're going to land the airport.
You still have trillions of dollars sitting there in retirement accounts that we now, legislation was talked about, discussed, penned. So we know that is something in their back pockets. Retirement accounts, trillions of dollars. Plus, there's bail-ins that are at their disposal. So, perhaps they're not quote unquote quantitative easing, but there's still funds there that they can have access to. They can do some, creative financing. And again, will it be enough to keep it from collapsing? That's key. But I do believe you'll see changes in those areas.
We have an article here from. Got an article here from. Well, we'll save it. It's time to take another break. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hey folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody? Oh, here's what I was going to talk about. Here's something that's interesting. This is an article from Michael Snyder. You may have seen his work, very prolific, the Economic Collapse blog, and an attorney. I think he's got a couple of different degrees. Very intelligent guy and very prolific writer. He's got a lot of stuff coming out all the time. But here's something from one of his articles. He says, right now, more than $15 trillion of stock market wealth has been wiped out globally since last June. Not just in the United States, and we're talking about China and Europe and whatever. We are talking since last June. That's an average of about $2 trillion. Disappearing from the global stock markets every month for the past 7 months. Now, question for me is, how long can the global GDP, which is about $75 trillion per year right now, how long can the global GDP withstand the loss of $2 trillion in collateral per month? Now, by itself, loss of $2 trillion per month in stock value is not catastrophic to the global economy. We don't just automatically subtract $2 trillion out of the $75 trillion global GDP. That's not the way it works. But if any of that stock has been used as collateral for loans at a 9-to-1 ratio under fractional reserve banking, the loss of stock value should reduce the global economy's access to credit. And that's what this economy really turns on. It turns on credit. And if people aren't borrowing and or they don't have collateral they used to have, said, I'd like to borrow $100,000 and let me put this stock up as collateral. Well, insofar as the stock is used as collateral, it can be used as collateral. If its value falls, it means there's less credit available. If the credit market shrinks, the overall economy should be slowed. And we are in danger of some sort of a collapse if this continues. I saw an article just lately where someone is complaining about Paul Ryan cutting a deal with Obama to go into big time debt, big time deficit on the new budget. And everyone is criticizing the Republicans for doing this, for going along with Obama. But we live in a debt-based monetary system. And we used to have an asset-based monetary system, and the fundamental asset was gold or silver. When we have an asset-based system, the fundamental wealth is gold or silver. When we have a debt-based monetary system, the fundamental wealth becomes debt, which is irrational, but nevertheless, that's what's going on. I believe that if they can't stimulate the public into spending more money, and that's been part of the problem they've had with quantitative easing, they dangle this carrot, and people are bored with carrots. We're not going in there and borrowing more money and spending more money and going into the debt that's needed, necessary, fundamental form of wealth. It's insane, but that appears to be the nature of it. With a debt-based monetary system, debt-based economy, if you people won't go into debt, then the government will. And I think that's why we're going to see these big deficits. They're not going to explain it to you because, as you can see, or as you can hear listening to me try to explain this, it's hard to believe, hard to understand, hard to explain. We're in a debt-based monetary system. The fundamental form of wealth is debt. And the government, if the public won't go deeper into debt, then the government will. And therefore, Paul Ryan is working with Obama to raise more deficits, to put us deeper into debt, to create the illusion that we are prosperous. It's crazy. It's insane. It's like doing drugs. All right? You can take a certain amount of drugs, and they will make you feel happy and frisky and whatever. But it ain't real. And sooner or later, you're going to come back down to reality. And when you crash, you're not going to enjoy it. You know, it's like drinking alcohol. You know, it makes everybody, boy, you know, you sure feel, you know, you feel younger, you feel more attractive and funnier and, you know, wittier and all that. But it's not true. Sooner or later, the fundamentals reassert. Our debt-based monetary system and our debt-based economy have put us in circumstances where right now, I think this is the reason why the Republicans were constantly, I mean, all throughout my life, fiscally responsible, limited government. I think they're going, and we see the contradictions and we get angry at the Republicans, and they can't defend themselves because this whole concept is a little too bizarre to explain to the American people. They don't think they can explain it, so they don't try. They just let us sit there and cuss at them. You know, to some extent, this even plays into why Trump is so popular. Republicans have claimed to be fiscal conservatives and have claimed that they want limited government. But if the public's not buying, if the public's not going into debt to buy, then somebody else has to, or the economy will collapse.
I got a question for you, Al.
Mm-hmm.
Today, Sarah Palin endorses Donald Trump. Good or bad?
I think it's interesting. I think it's Sarah Palin. I mean, it's like I endorse Donald Trump. Is that good and bad? It's, you know, I'm certainly not a major player, and I don't think Sarah Palin is anymore either. I think it's interesting. I'm not sure what motivates her anymore. I don't know what motivated her in the first place, but there's a certain amount of entertainment value in any of this. And people do, you're involved in this sort of thing, a certain amount of, look at me, look at me, look at me. I think maybe that's all Sarah Palin is saying. What do you think, good or bad?
I don't know.
Can't hurt. It's got to be good on balance. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it.
But
I don't think it's major.
No, I don't think she has the conservative backing like everyone thought that she did. But you're right. It can't
hurt. That's because you were jealous because she knew how to skin a moose and you didn't.
That's not true.
That was, yes, it was. I remember. Boy, you were jealous. Oh, that woman knows how to skin a moose.
I was just never a fan of her. That's all.
No, I liked her. I did like her.
All guys liked her. She's pretty.
Now, wait a second. You are impugning my motives right now. You're suggesting that my political opinions could be swayed by a pretty face, and I'm just that's certainly not true.
It's not, huh?
No.
Oh, okay, sure. Okay. Well, that's what McCain was betting on.
Yeah, well, she made up for McCain. She made up for McCain. I would have felt what they should have done if they'd have run her for president and McCain for vice president, the Republicans might have won.
No.
You don't think so?
No. No.
Well, maybe if they taught McCain how to skin a moose, then maybe he would have won.
But anyway, he got her support. So if it helps them, it took me a long time to say this, Al. But I'm not even, I just didn't want to support Trump. I didn't want to support him because I just didn't think he was. But as we're getting a little bit closer, and we still have, good Lord, how many more months before the election, I'd have to say I'm pretty close to thinking Trump is going to have to be, he's going to have to get my vote.
Well, I mean, who else?
Yeah.
You know, and I've got an interesting little comment on Trump here that was in Vox magazine, and the headline is "One Tweet That Explains Why Donald Trump Is Winning." And it says, "The Atlantic's fantastic political reporter Molly Ball made a really smart observation on Twitter." And what she says, and what she wrote on Twitter was, "All the other candidates say Americans are angry, and I understand. Trump says I'm angry."
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, all the rest of politicians say, "Well, I feel your pain." Trump says, "I'm pissed."
Angry.
And they are saying, "Wait a second." Yeah, he says, "I'm angry."
Angry.
Yeah, I understand that. Speaking.
I want you to give me a dollar every time you swear.
No, that's not swearing. Swearing involves.
Yeah. Go on.
In any case, Ball referring to the moment of the debate when Trump asked about South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley's statement that Republicans shouldn't follow the siren call of the angriest voices, responded that he would gladly accept the mantle of anger. He continued, "I will gladly accept the mantle of anger. Our military is a disaster. Our health care is a horror. Obamacare, we're going to repeal it and replace it. We have no borders. Our vets are being treated horribly. Illegal immigration is beyond belief. Our country is being run by incompetent people. And yes, I am angry. And I won't be angry when we fix it. But until we fix it, I'm very, very angry. I'm angry because our country is a mess." And the article continues, "This anger has been the key, perhaps has been a key, perhaps the key aspect of his candidacy from the start." And I think that's right. I think that's Trump cares enough to be angry about this system. We're going to take a break now. We're going to pause a little early. Millie's going to explain why.
Yeah, it's just my own little Glenn Frey. He was a songwriter, guitarist for the Eagles. He died yesterday, and they played one of my favorite songs the Eagles did of all time, and he co-wrote it with Jackson Browne. And for those of you who don't like, Take It Easy, you can shut the radio off. For those that do, stay tuned, and we're going to end the program with that. So Take It Easy.